Welcome back to Peace, Learn, Health. I am your host, Marina, and I am here to educate you, inspire you on your wellness, mindfulness, and inner journey to self-improvement. Welcome back, guys. I am so excited to be back as your host from Peace, Learn, Health, Marina. Of course, it's me. And today we actually have a very special guest. Her name is Isol Kim, and she is a business leader, and she is an MIT graduate, majored in urban planning. She is known for starting up and consulting and being an advisor and PowerPoint guru, and she's a community builder, which we talk about in this episode, especially with Italy. So definitely listen and tune into that. And she speaks 4 different languages: English, Italian, Korean, and Spanish. But the most important thing that she's doing right now is storytelling. So I do advise you guys to listen to the rest of the podcast episode so you guys know what kind of storytelling she does. So without further ado, here is today's podcast. To introduce you to our special guest, Isol Kim. Hi, Isol. How are you?
I am doing great. How are you, Marina?
Great. So can you tell us a little bit about yourself?
Sure. I am a business executive turned full-time storyteller in the middle of a sabbatical. I grew up in Guam, a little Pacific island, also a territory of the United States, and spent 14 years in Boston and recently moved to Italy 15 months ago.
Whoa, that's amazing. Italy, I love it. Can you tell us how, you know, your story of how you became a businesswoman?
Sure. So my entire family, like generations and generations back, are all business people. You know, some families have families of lawyers and doctors, and for us, it's just genetic. Like my grandfather created the first like caramel company right before the Korean War. And so my parents were also entrepreneurs. They were the first driving school in Guam. And so I always knew I would go into business. But actually in college, I studied urban planning because I liked the way it made me think. I like to solve complex problems, and there's nothing quite as complex as a living, breathing city, right? With people in it and the geopolitical factors, the spatial factors. And it was a lot of fun learning it. But at the end, I couldn't really deny my genetics. And so I went into the business sector, but with various different industries. I've never been in the same industry twice, and I've had 7 jobs in the last 10 years. So started in the corporate world working at Gillette until my last sort of quote unquote real job was the head of strategy for an innovation district in Cambridge, Massachusetts.
Nice. So can you tell us why you chose to study in MIT and major in urban planning? Why did you choose that major specifically?
Gosh, so I didn't even know what urban planning was before I got to MIT. And it's not even like one of the majors you go to MIT for, right? Like people think, wow, like MIT, the most popular major is computer engineering and sciences. So I was always, like I said, a kind of business-minded person. And I always thought I would go into the humanities. I had other options, like going to either UPenn or Georgetown for international development. But at the end of the day, I went to MIT because I loved the people that I met there. You would think it's a, you know, these are the top smartest people you can imagine. And yet the environment was not competitive at all. You're actually encouraged to work on your homework, which we called P sets or problem sets. You were encouraged to always collaborate, and you were always encouraged to be well-rounded. And so part of the requirements to graduate from MIT is you have to take at least 8 humanities classes. So to fulfill that, in my freshman year, I was really lucky enough to be in a class called The Once and Future City. And this class was about picking a specific area within the Boston area, and you had to write 4 essays about it. And these essays were about like looking through trends, artifacts, the layers that created a city. And I kept walking down the same streets over and over again for this assignment. And one day I noticed that the trees on one side of the street were taller than the other. And can you imagine walking down the same space and then for something so new to click in your brain? It's like, wow, what else have I been missing in my life? And it was this wonder and this curiosity that was sparked in me from this one class that made me fall in love with urban planning. And then obviously later on working on international development projects, thinking about how to build a community together. These are all the things that I fell in love with. And we have really one of the best urban planning departments in the world. It's just an unknown treasure at MIT, and I loved every second of it.
Great. So you basically consider yourself a community builder, and you did like an interview in Chinatown, Boston. Can you tell us a little bit more about that?
Yeah. So as I was working in my career in business, I wanted to also explore the storytelling side of my passions. And so I created a video web series called The Sense of the City. The whole idea was, How do people see the city? How do people feel the city? And I wanted people to be curious about their streets, about the not only the streets that they walk by all the time, but about their city, and to care more. And so I would interview a bunch of people on tape, and they would give me their perspective. So episode 1 was actually of my mailman, who was in the South End of Boston. And can you imagine, he walked the same route for 30 years. 30 years. Wow. And so to get his perspective on change over time was really great. And then the episode you're mentioning was actually a professor at MIT of urban planning. But I was really interested because he had moved to Boston in Chinatown in the 1930s. So I was like, wow, what was it like, you know, almost 70 years ago? And we also talked about what it meant to be Chinese in Chinatown. I feel like people just throw out this term as if like Chinese means one thing, just like being Asian or being Black. Like it's a catch-all phrase. And so we kind of dug deeper a little bit. And then at the end of each episode, each of our speakers would speak to a clue on how to read the city. And so there's a little bit of urban planning there for the listeners.
Great. So can you actually tell us a little bit more of your experience working with Gillette as well?
Oh, gosh. Yeah. So Gillette was my first job out of college. It was the job where I got to meet my husband, my Italian husband. So that's sort of the connection as to why I'm living in Italy now.
Love it.
And so I was an urban planner, right? And I got this job in consumer research, which again, I didn't even know what consumer research was. But the best way I would describe it to even my parents, who still are kind of confused, is I was translating the voice of the consumers and their needs into business strategy. And I loved it. I got to travel all around the world and talk to mostly guys about, you know, how they shaved. In one project in particular, I call it my ball shaving project, because we were talking about body grooming and launching a body grooming product. And so it was like going to Germany and Brazil and talking about, you know, some private areas, which was a lot of fun. But eventually, you know, I was like, man, what are you doing with your life? You can't talk about ball shaving for the rest of this is not your purpose, Isla. You gotta find something else. So after 2.5 years, I left. But it was a fun time to be at Procter & Gamble at the time, and got to meet my husband. So I think it was worth it.
Awesome. Thank you so much for sharing that. That's amazing. So can you tell us what makes you feel like a business leader?
You know, I think I still have a bit of imposter syndrome, especially since I've kind of moved out of that career trajectory. But There were so many times when I was the youngest person in the room. There were so many times where I was the only woman in the room. So many times where I was the only woman of color, first generation, maybe an MIT grad versus all the other sort of Ivy League, managerial types. And it was, and I remember that like people would often just judge me by the way they looked at me. At one point I was working at Northeastern University and I was the youngest director of our department by probably like 10 years. And I had people working for me that were younger than me. I'm sorry, older than me. And they would introduce me as their boss and they were like, "What? I thought you were a student," because I was like wearing like, a backpack to work and everything. But I think the key there of not only feeling like a leader, but being a leader is beyond the title, but it's about showing your leadership skills by showing up for your team, by having a vision, and continuously showing empathy to those who work for you, who work with you, and those who work above you. And I think the key part is to learn how to influence those in your circle to see your vision and bring them along for the journey. And that's been, I think, a cornerstone of how I like to operate as a business leader, and really got to do that across a lot of different industries.
Great. So, were there any challenges along the way when dealing with business that you feel like you can share some light to that for anyone listening?
I think the toughest part for me was trying to reconcile what I wanted to get out of the job versus what the job required of me. I really like taking on jobs that don't have defined job descriptions. I like to come in and figure out what the needs are, create programs and strategies around it and implement it and pilot it. But I hated managing the jobs. Like once it was up and running, it's normal for a manager to kind of want you to keep going, but I was always looking for the next challenge. And when I wasn't presented the opportunity to grow in a pace that I liked or in the way that I wanted to, I had a tendency to be like, okay, well, I'm out and I'm gonna go find the next job. Which, when the economy is strong and you have the confidence in the network, that's easy to do. And I would highly recommend folks to not be afraid to advocate for yourself and to know when it's time to break up, because, a job is kind of like a relationship. And so I say, really have the courage to be honest with yourself on whether it's worth it to stay if you feel. If your values are, not and needs are not being met by your employer. On the other hand, I would say I wish I had stayed at certain jobs a little bit longer to because no matter how smart and how fast you can work and how quickly, you can implement projects, it takes a year in most organizations, especially if you're working in a kind of network leadership way, to start gaining the trust of people. And that's when you can really make an impact. And I don't, and in certain jobs, I wish I had stayed a little bit longer and I wish I had a little bit more patience to work through some of the difficulties so that I could see the fruits of my labor and all the strategy that I had laid out.
Great. So thank you so much for actually sharing that. Can you actually tell us a little bit about your blog and how storytelling is such an important thing for you?
So I guess I've always in the like love stories. I was one of those kids that my parents had to yell at me to stop reading at the dinner table. I would just like literally read in the bathtub. I would literally have my book. We had a glass table, dining room table, and I would put my book under the glass and was pretending to eat, but I was really reading my Babysitter's Club books or whatever was the latest. I was super nerd. And my eyesight got really bad because I would read until like midnight under the covers with a flashlight. And so I've always been transported by stories. And maybe because I lived in Guam, isolated, not much happening, that I had to rely on my imagination to travel and experience a lot of different cultures at that time. But really, I focus most of my teens and 20s on very analytical work in the business sector, and I never had the time to exercise my storytelling muscles. And so when I had this opportunity, since we moved to Italy, I really wanted to take advantage of this space and time and explore what storytelling could look like across different mediums. And so I started with blogging to kind of be like warm-ups for my and to draw out my creative writing juices. And that was fun for a while. Then I went into I tried podcasting because I think it's such a very pure medium for storytelling. Like, unlike video, you don't have images, you don't have color, you don't have text that you can kind of manipulate the emotions of the audience. You literally have your story and a good voice and maybe some smart editing at the end, but I consider it a pure form of storytelling. So that's why I started my podcast, The Serendipity Stories. And then lastly, I'm an Asian American living in a very conservative, very small town in Northeast Italy, and in a small town called Treviso, and they're kind of stereotypically known to be closed and a little bit cold, especially to foreigners. And I wanted to change that. I wanted to kind of break through that and accelerate the friend-making process. I wanted to be one of those people saying hi, not just to my butcher, but to, the lady down the street and everyone who lives above and down and below my apartment. And so I started a project called The Humans of Treviso, which is literally like the humans of New York, where I go out and I talk to strangers, go into their houses, we grab coffee, I interview them, get their life story, and I have a friend with me who takes their photos, and then we publish it on Instagram and Facebook. And that's another way where I've been collecting stories and retelling them on different kinds of platforms.
So can you share a little bit more about your experience as far as you said, just living in a small little town, like you said, in Italy, and how that feels for you as a person who's from a different background? Like what do you feel is gonna, like you said, you're trying to overcome that idea with these videos and everything like that. Do you feel there's something else more powerful that you feel that others can do as well?
Yeah, so I will say it's been during the sabbatical, it's really magical, right? Because I have all this space. I'm in a new environment. I'm untethered to a lot of the baggages that may have held me back. But it's also been very jarring because it's been a total massive shift and a loss of identity that I've been trying to rebuild. Like, back in America, I knew what I was. I had it written on a business card, right? And it was associated with my job. I don't have a job that neatly now fits into a business card. And so I had to start all the way from there. And the second thing that moving to Italy has kind of brought to my attention is I never really identified with or was in touch with the fact that I was Korean American. Like, I was more proud and I was leaning into the fact that I was a woman and a feminist and now being a wife and all these other identities. But here in Italy, the first thing that people notice about you is that you look different and that you're like probably, and they assume I'm Chinese and they assume I can't speak in Italian. And or like when I get introduced, now I'm my husband's wife. And I've never had that before, and it bothers the crap out of me. And I, could have gone on lamenting about it. But what I chose to do is, you know what? I'm going to recreate my identity and I'm going to lean into that. And that's how I'm going to introduce myself. And I'm not going to lose myself to the in the shadow of my husband, in the shadow of how other people judge me to be. I'm going to tell them who I am. So for sure, I face microaggressions on the street all the time where people will come up to me and say, oh, Chinese, Chinese, or like, these other racial epithets. And I don't take shit anymore. I'm like, who's Chinese? Are you Chinese? Because I'm not Chinese. and I'll say it back to them in Italian. be like, you know, one of those moments. It's tiring, and I wish I didn't have to do that. But I say this because in the context of Black Lives Matter, like, it's just a small, it gave me so much more empathy on what our Black and African American and African friends feel all around the world, right? You add also like this layer of violence, which luckily I haven't had to feel. It's just it's other kinds of emotional trauma that I go through. But that's why also for every bad encounter, though, I have 10 beautiful encounters, because I'm proactively going out and I choose to be a part of this community. I choose to reject the notion that I have to be an outsider. And through this Humans of Treviso, I've been into the homes of so many strangers and grabbed coffee with them. And now we're friends. And now I've met enough people to create a group of expat women of Treviso that Italian women want to join because they want to be a part of it. And so I think it's a choice that everyone can make when you're in a new environment. You can choose to be, I don't want to say a victim, but you can choose to let other people's narrative define you, or you can find a new path forward and put in the extra work and get to know people. I mean, I'll tell you, when we first moved to Treviso, none of our neighbors said hi to us, which I thought was really weird. And I was like, is it racial? Is it because we're not like from Treviso? Like, are they just stuck up? What's going on? But I was like, you know what? That's them. I'm going to do me. And I left a bottle of wine on each of their doorsteps. And I said, hello, this is like, we are Esol and Zeno Adami. And here's our number. If you ever need us, like, here's our life story. Like, and we'd love to get to know you. And then, you know what, the next day they came over and they're like, wow, that was so nice. And now we do like dinners with our neighbors. We're part of the gossip circle, you know? And so again, I share that as an example of like, you control the narrative on how you want to be a part of a community. And if you want to do it, you also have to put in the work.
That's such an amazing and inspiring story, honestly. So since we're talking about amazing stories, can you tell us a little bit about you hosting Serendipities? Can you tell us a little bit like the purpose behind it as well?
Yeah. So as I mentioned, you know, there was the sort of storytelling technical reason of me trying to explore this new medium of storytelling, and which I consider a very pure form. But the idea of doing a podcast around other people's stories about serendipity felt really natural to me. I mean, when I look back in my life, there's so many things that happened that felt random at the time or coincidence. But really, when I reflect on it, I'm like, wow, if that hadn't happened, I would have never, like, you know, got into MIT, or I would have never met my husband if I like hadn't gone to that one webinar, which led me to interview with the guy at Gillette who gave me that job, or how I, you know, met certain friends that have become near and dear. How we moved to Italy was like a whole another story. And as I was recounting this to others, people would tell me their really astonishing and incredible, almost like Hollywood movie level stories. I was like, we have to retell this. And the whole purpose is I wanted to put out some feel good content where, you know, we're in the middle of a pandemic. We're in the middle of, I think, a renaissance of wokeness, of understanding the racial inequities and social inequities that have existed in the US and obviously throughout the history of humanity. And if it can feel like things are going out of control, it can almost feel like things are hopeless. But I think with these stories of serendipity, I hope people understand it. While it might be tough now, if we, you know, we can always look back later or even now and realize maybe it's going to mean something. We might not know what it means now, but maybe it'll mean something. And look how that random thing that happened when, you know, Joe Califatis in episode one got hit by a bus. Look what happened to her life, right? She didn't know she was going to end up being a Hollywood actress, but that's what really like triggered her. Or how episode three, Kalila Rice became the first Black mayor of a rural Oklahoma town, and how that happened by accident from how she heard about it. And so I just wanted to inspire people.
That's amazing. Thank you for sharing that. And can you tell us a little bit about Business Love? You have a book coming out. Can you tell us a little bit more about that?
Yeah, so I love being at the intersection of multiple disciplines and thinking and industries. And the idea for this book came about because I have been in the business sector for the last 10 years. And, you know, I've learned so much. There's all these frameworks that they give us about how to be a better leader, how to communicate better. We also learn, you know, in the finance sector about like mergers and acquisitions. How do you get two organizations to work together when they come from completely different cultures? And I started seeing the parallels of the lessons in the business world that applied also in relationships and in my relationship with my husband. I'm like, oh, like maybe it's not always effective to yell at my husband to do the dishes or take out the trash. Like I learned in marketing the importance of kind of creating a campaign and massaging the message depending on the receptivity of the audience. You know, I had learned also about like mergers and acquisitions. And I'm like, wait, isn't that what a marriage is at the end of the day, where you're merging two different families together? In our case, it's a Korean, very traditional family with an Italian conservative family together. Like, how's that going to work out? And so we had like a lot of funny stories that I put into the book of my relationship with my husband and stories of my friends who have applied these skills that we practice every day in the business setting, but we're supposed to kind of figure it out just without any kind of education in our relationship. It just didn't make sense. So I'm like, my point is, let's not start from scratch when it comes to our relationships, which, by the way, I think is the most important thing that we should try to maintain and be successful at. If you already have the training of how to be a good manager, a leader, consumer researcher, engineer, business person, apply some of those skills. And I'm not saying you should like treat your relationship as transactional or, you know, you need to fire your husband like you would maybe in the business world, but apply some of the positive aspects and the positive frameworks in the business setting because you already know how to do it because you're doing it at work. And just kind of get rid of the artificial barrier between the career version of you and the home at home version, relationship version of you.
Great. Thank you so much for sharing that as well. That's an interesting book, it seems. So can you tell us any things that you're doing now with this whole pandemic as far as something that can keep you like grounded or some kind of, you know, tips that you can give to our listeners about what you do to just, you know, find yourself?
Yeah, so when I was in quarantine here in Italy, it was much stricter than anything in the United States. We literally for 60 days could not go outside of our house unless we were going to the supermarket or to walk your dog or to go to the pharmacy or the hospital, which, by the way, everybody was avoiding. And I think it's tough days ahead for the U.S. as I think just yesterday there were like 65,000 new cases alone in one day, which is crazy. I think the key is to have some sort of routine. It's really easy to kind of let the uncertainty of the world overwhelm you. And then so you just kind of make it for a free for all and start eating gelato for breakfast. And you're like, nah, I don't really need to change my shirt, you know, for 5 days. Or like, you know, you're trying to get away with the bare minimum on your Zoom calls, and slowly you're like, sweatpants, okay, no pants. And then it's like, no, like you really want to, you know, set some ground rules. And especially if you're with a partner, I think having ground rules and setting new traditions, new routines, and being creative is going to keep the spark alive. With my husband, actually, we started every night doing a drawing competition. We would have a theme, and we would just kind of like use our markers and draw, you know, random things. And we put it online, and it became a competition where our friends would vote whose was better. And so we didn't do it every day during quarantine, but I think we have 40 different images that we, and we're neither of us are drawers, so trust me, we're not talking about Picasso level stuff. But it was a fun way to kind of end the evening, and then also like just feel like we're a part of a community by kind of getting engagement from our broader friend groups. So yeah, I think routine, staying creative, and yeah, don't eat gelato for breakfast. That's when you know you've hit a wall and you're like, you got to reassess your life there.
I mean, I definitely don't blame you for the gelato if you ever did. I personally went to Italy, so I could justify you for that one. So
It's really good here. It's like next level. So, okay, yes. But yeah, no, at a certain point, you gotta stop. Like on your seventh consecutive day, you're like, what are you doing with your life? This is not okay.
So can you tell our listeners where they can find you?
Sure. I gotta be honest, I'm not like great at social media, but I have created a couple websites. So I have a personal website which kind of talks about my business work and the consulting work I do, as well as where you can find all these different projects. It's www.esolmkim.com. It's YESS as in Sam, EULM as in Mary, KIM.com. And then for the Serendipity Stories, you can download and subscribe to anywhere you listen to podcasts. On Apple, Google, Spotify, TuneIn, etc. And we have a website, serendipitystories.co, Facebook and Instagram at serendipitystories.podcast. And then for the Humans of Treviso project, which is really my baby, and I'm having so much fun with it right now. It's in Italian. We translated it to Gente di Treviso, and we're on Instagram, Facebook at Gente GENTEDITREVISO.
Nice. Wow, that's a lot of projects. That's so exciting. So I have to ask, what does peace, learn, health mean to you?
Well, I'm still trying to find peace, so I can't speak to that. But I will say, I'll start with the health part. Since moving to Europe, and especially Italy, which is known for La Dolce Vita, there's really something to be said about taking time for your family and building and reinvesting in your relationships. And there is something to be said about connecting to nature. And there's something to be said about the joy of just taking a stroll around your neighborhood that I think has made a healthier person emotionally, physically, and spiritually that I don't see every day in the United States. And to me, health is about the symbiosis, the balance, the harmony of finding the just the balance of your connection with others and with nature that I think we take for granted. And then in terms of learning, I think it's just something you have to do. It's a need that needs to be nurtured, and it's a voice that needs to take priority in your head, because once you stop learning, you stop growing, and you stop being interesting, and you stop being curious, And I think you get really stuck in life. And then maybe ultimately, if you can get to the health and the learning, you can arrive at peace. That's my theory.
Love it. Thank you so much, Yisol, for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me.
Thank you for tuning in to Peace Learn Health. If you want to be a guest in the show, all you have to do is send me a pitch by going ahead and telling me what you want to talk about. Whether it's about spirituality, whether it's about going ahead and talking about health, mindfulness, or your own self-improvement journey. And in order to do that, just email me at peacelearnhealth@hotmail.com. Podcast disclaimer. Make sure you talk to your medical advisor or a professional advisor.